This lunchtime, we're on the yellow sheets that you'll find in the middle of the tables, or some of you have already snaffled them in front of you. And we're looking under this title, Ignorance of the Law is an Excuse, But. And before we plunge right into the middle of this bit of Romans, let me try and give you a feel for the passage. I suppose it was now 6 or 7 years ago when I was back in Norwich and I was working round Norfolk, that one Sunday lunchtime the phone went and I picked it up and I discovered on the other end of the phone was someone whom I'd not seen since I was kind of so high. She'd been an old family friend and she happened to live on the North Norfolk coast somewhere. And she rang up and we were chatting about the family and we got through all the usual bits of news. And then she asked me what I did and what my job was. And my job was involved with mission around Norfolk, and I said that, and as soon as she heard the word mission, I think her mind leapt to the thought of missionary. And she said to me, down the fence, she said, are there any heathen in Norfolk? Well, I wasn't quite sure what you say to a comment like that, so I said, well, I'd never used that word myself, I said, but, I mean, if you press me, yes, there are plenty. Oh, she said, astonished. There aren't any around here, as you well know. Well, I did happen to know what village she lived in. But, you know, the more I thought about that afterwards, I realized that what she was doing was acknowledging what we'd all do, and yet we all do it at different levels, that there was a big difference in her mind between Christian and heathen. And yet if you pressed her to define what she meant, when she was speaking about Christian, she wasn't using phrases like born again. I mean, she'd have run a mile from the thought of that. She wasn't even meaning church going. I mean, I suppose for her to be in Norfolk meant you were Christian. It was something almost cultural, wasn't it? She was in a Christian country. So if that's my background, I must be Christian. It's a bit like those forms you sometimes have to fill in hospitals, I'm told, you know, where you have to actually put down your religion. And many, many people put down Church of England because that's the church they don't go to. I mean, if they did go, they would go to it, but they don't go, so they don't. But that's what she seemed to mean by Christian. And for heathen, well, of course, heathen wasn't someone who didn't actively follow Jesus. No, it wasn't as tight a description as that. Heathen was, well, probably almost by definition, thousands of miles away, but some remote Amazon tribe. That Amazon chief that Sting is taking around Europe at the moment, you know, the one with the sort of saucer in his mouth, on the Save the Rainforest, I should think he would probably qualify as heathen in her book. Someone who's never heard about the Christian message. It is almost a cultural definition. And yet the difference was very clear in her mind. And if you'd gone to her and you'd said, look, the Christian God is the one God. Jesus is the judge of all of us. She wouldn't have any problems with that. She'd be able to take that on board. And actually, the thought of it for her would bring security. Because she's clearly on the right side of the line. She's in the Christian country. And if she thought at all as a result of that of people in need, they would be people a long way away. Only the heathen need a missionary. Now I say that because I know that, you know, lots of people have got the difference in their minds at one level or another, but most of the people I talk to today come to completely different conclusions because of it. Most people are aware that at some level or another there's Christian and heathen, even if, like me, they wouldn't use that word. But if you say to them, look, if the Christian God is the one God, if Jesus is the judge of all people, it doesn't give them no problem, it gives them a huge problem. I want to say, well, that's very unfair. What about those who've never heard? They must be at a massive disadvantage. And the reason for starting with all of that is to try to give you some clue as to the kind of issue Paul is grappling with in these verses. You see, look at them at the top, will you? Look at verse 16. You'll see he's very clear that God will judge.
and he'll judge by Jesus Christ.
Yes, the Christian God, he's saying, is the one God. That's his gospel. Yet he knows that he's speaking about two distinct groups of people. They appear in verse 12. There are those whom he describes as without the law, and those whom he describes as under the law. It's not a civil law, it's God's law. God's particular, specific revelation of his commands. Some people have it, and others don't have that particular revelation. And at the same time, he said that his gospel, which talks about Jesus judging both these groups, will show how God is absolutely right and just and fair and righteous. Now, how do you square it, Paul? Surely here's a time when ignorance of the law must be an excuse. Do you see what he's coming to terms with? There is a difference between people. Some people have got an advantage. Well, let's try and get to grips with it. There is a difference, yes. We'll discover in these verses he never denies the difference, but he's going to say there is not an unfair advantage. Look at verses 12 and 13. All who have sinned without the law will also perish without the law, and all who have sinned under the law will be judged by the law. For it is not the hearers of the law who are righteous before God, but the doers of the law who will be justified. Now let me start for a moment for those who come into the nice advantaged group. Because these are actually shattering verses to the false comfort that many have derived from this position. The Jew, because that's who he's referring to, as to those who are under the law, who've heard it, who've received it, the Jew does have an advantage. Paul doesn't deny it. He has the law. He knows it. God's revealed it to him. But Paul doesn't leap to the conclusion as a result of that God has got some built-in bias towards him, and at the end of the day is bound to all work out okay. No, he simply reaches this conclusion. You've been given the law. You've been given this privilege. Well, God's therefore entitled to judge you by it. All who've sinned under the law will be judged by the law. Far from being safe because he knows the law, actually the Jew will stand under the judgment of the law. The privilege of having the law will not get him acquitted. He must do it. It's not the hearers of the law who are righteous before God. That would make for an extraordinary situation, wouldn't it? But the doers of the law who'll be justified. And you see, if you put the advantage, so-called, into that perspective, it does change things. The more you know, the more absurd it is to assume that I can front up to God and say, I'm righteous. The more you know, the more absurd it is to assume that I can front up to God and expect him to look at me and say, acquitted, justified. That's true for my friend in Norfolk, isn't it? I wonder if she'd be feeling quite so cozy about everything if verse 13 was clearly explained to her. That all this Christian heritage, culture, whatever knowledge she's got, and it's probably quite an amount of the Christian truth and the Christian law and gospel, doesn't make her by itself secure. Just means God is entitled to expect that much more from her. It's actually true for the many who are concerned about those who are at a disadvantage. Because I have to confess that the people who come up to me and throw the line, what about those who've never heard, so often seem incredibly blasé about their own standing. I don't say it's always said that way, but very often it strikes me it's a question that's raised as a smokescreen to try and get away from where I stand before God. We'll come to the problem in a moment. But I simply want to say that I would be very surprised if for the vast majority of us here this lunchtime, the truth isn't that we know too much. It's very easy to see how God could condemn us. Justice gives him no alternative. That's why the Jew needed the gospel, which is the thrust of why Paul is writing this letter. That's why Norfolk needs a missionary. That's why you need the gospel. That's why I need the gospel. Because, you see, one day we will face the judge. We must. Because, you see, I can't get acquitted by myself. Because I've sinned under the law. And all that I know about God doesn't help me. It just makes me more responsible. There is a difference, but not an unfair advantage. There is a difference, but not an escape. We come to that over the page, but don't turn over just yet, because let me read the verses that these apply to. Here's this other group. Here are the people who are without the law, if you like. See, look at verse 12. All who have sinned without the law will also perish without the law. Verse 14. When Gentiles who have not the law do by nature what the law requires, they're a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that what the law requires is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or perhaps excuse them. Now, the more I study these words, the more I discover that they are no less disturbing. All who have sinned without the law will also perish without the law. Yes, there's something reassuring there. It's telling me God is not going to pull a fast one. I'm not going to come to that judgment day, and he's not going to suddenly fish out of his pocket a book of regulations I've never had a chance to see and begin to read out all the ones that I've broken. Now, if I've been without the law, then my judgment will also be not on the basis of the law. Ignorance of the law is an excuse. When Gentiles, verse 14, who have not the law, he says, do by nature what the law requires, they're a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law, he's not going to blur the difference. You can front up to God on the day, and if you can say from the bottom of your heart, as the charge is read out against you, look, I never realized that was wrong. I never knew there was anything wrong in that. I never knew that I was expected to do this. If you can truly say that on the day when the secrets of your heart, not just the public posing, when the secrets of your heart are judged, if you can say, I never knew that, why, your conflicting thoughts, the conflict between the charge that's being read out against you and your innermost thoughts which said, I really didn't know, will excuse you. Ignorance of the law is an excuse, but I mustn't count on the fact that I'm without the law to protect me. But Gentiles, heathens, are not people who live in utter darkness, unable to tell any right from wrong. That would be an awful caricature of people, wouldn't it? That would actually be grossly inaccurate, and the New Testament doesn't make that mistake. The New Testament says, I may not have the law, but when by nature I do what the law requires, why, I show that what the law requires is written on my heart. Kim Kyu-hui, or however she's pronounced, is a North Korean. And I imagine that if I put a blank piece of paper in front of her and I said, write down the Ten Commandments, she'd probably score 0 out of 10. I've no reason to suppose she'd even understand the question. She's actually the North Korean terrorist who's just been found guilty of blowing up that South Korean airliner a couple of years ago, in which 115 people died. 2 days ago, she was sentenced to death. But during her trial, which has been going on for some time now, she has more than once said that she deserves to die for what she did. Those who seem to be in the know say that she's full of depression and guilt. Now, why is she like that? Well, it's either all a show to try and get a more lenient sentence, or her conscience and her conflicting thoughts, the difference between what the North Korean agents told her she was doing and the sense of doing it for the glory of my country on the one hand, and her innermost self, which knows it's wrong to murder like that. Her conscience and her conflicting thoughts are accusing her. That's what Paul's talking about here. She doesn't need to have the law, does she? She knows it's wrong. You say, well, that's a very extreme example. Of course it is. But what I'm saying is, every society, and you ask the anthropologists, they'll tell you it's true. Every society is a moral society. Every society has its moral boundaries. Every grouping of people has got its norms, its sense of right and wrong, of ought and ought not. It's got its limits somewhere on marriage and the boundaries to it. Some version of commandments about adultery. It's got its limits somewhere on property and some version of commandments on theft. It's got its limits somewhere on what we do to other people's persons. Some version of the commandments on murder. Every society I've come across teaches that disobedience to parents is wrong. You know, my two little children, they'd probably score 0 out of 10 if you tested them on the Ten Commandments. I've not taught them to them yet. And unless Sunday school's done it, then I'm afraid they're ignorant. Now, that may be bad on me. Lucy's only 2. She wouldn't be able to write them down even if she knew them anyway. But you see, she doesn't need the law. She really doesn't. I can hear the scream from the room downstairs, and I can go there. You know, the scream comes about every 10 minutes on a good day. But I can go there, and I can discover on one side of the room, all hunched up on the floor, head buried in her hands, there's Lucy. It's partly the child thing, you know, if she can't see anyone, no one can see her. I don't even need to ask her if she's done anything wrong, do I? I mean, her whole posture is telling me I've blown it. And she's all hunched up there because the thing that was great fun, destroying whatever it was of Anna's she destroyed, she also knows is wrong. And she can't look at me because she can't front up to me and say, Dad, I'm innocent, you know, I'm ignorant, I didn't know it was wrong. She knows any too well. It's amusing in a 2-year-old. But you see, it's sobering when we come to us. The Gentile may be without the law, Paul is saying. But he or she is not without knowledge of God's will. They may not speak of it in those terms. Lucy may, almost certainly doesn't think, oh dear, I've broken what God tells me I should do or should not do. But she knows she's done wrong. The Gentile shows by his or her actions and conscience and conflicting thoughts, I know I've done wrong. And that's what's fatal. You've sinned. And you can sin without the law. Well, so you can perish without it. God is perfectly fair. He only judges according to our lights. That's what he seems to be saying here, isn't it? But which of us lives up to our lights? So you won't find the Hindu who says that his karma, his good works are perfect. You won't find the Muslim who will face Allah without sins. And which of us wants to front up on the day of judgment and say, God, I've lived up to my standards. All I've truly known of what's right and wrong. Which of us thinks that on the day when the secrets of our hearts, the real truth comes out, we can front up to God and start talking like that? Really, God, I have an impeccable conscience. That's why the Gentile needed the gospel. That's why those who've never heard need the gospel. Because we must face the judge. On that day, says Paul in verse 16, a day that's been fixed even if we don't know the date, when according to my gospel, God judges the secrets of men by Christ Jesus. And I can't get acquitted by myself. Ignorance of the law is an excuse. But which of us hasn't sinned, even without the law? Well, we can perish without the law. There is a difference, but not an escape. So I've just ended with that last point. It's not actually justice I need. See, when it comes to God and man, and particularly aware of this difference, the 20th century seems to start so often with the premise that everyone deserves to be saved. How on earth can God condemn anyone? The answer, when you examine the facts, of course, is quite easy. Justice insists he does. In fact, if we're going to go by justice, it is the only thing he can do. Because I am guilty. Now, the gospel turns the whole thing on its head. Its starting point, its premise is this. We, all of us, deserve to be condemned. How on earth can God save anyone? That's why Paul speaks of judgment as part of his gospel, part of the gospel. See, without it, if we don't understand this truth, we'll never look beyond ourselves. We'll never see the urgency and the necessity of the gospel. We'll never understand why the gospel's so vital. Because it tells me God can save anyone. That's why I'm longing to get to the end of the series, when we discover how he does it. But next week it's Riding Lights. And now it's coffee and a couple of questions that don't score high marks for subtlety. Thanks for listening.